Thanks, Marco, and thanks for organizing this session, Marco and others, on transformations of organic matter and minerals and whatnot. So I thought I would present this, which is, by the way, on behalf of a former undergraduate in my lab, Morgan Barnes, in the context of a story. We'll have characters, the setting, and have some rising action. We'll have a high point, and then at the end, I'll close with a resolution. In any good story, you need characters, and the first character we're going to discuss is carbon. And here's a simplified carbon cycle, atmospheric CO2, and I took these numbers from Marcus Cleaver and Johannes Lehmann's paper that was published about a couple years ago. CO2 can be taken up into vegetation via photosynthesis. A portion of this carbon can enter the solar pool, which is quite large. In terms of picograms carbon, there's been a lot of interest in trying to understand processes which change carbon, which can increase carbon sequestration, inputs such as increased inputs, fertilization, organic soil amendments, crop rotation intensity can make a difference, that can increase the soil organic pool, but it's not just inputs, it's also outputs. And so this review by West and Johan Six back about a decade ago, I kind of adopted this, outputs make a difference. So there's this balance between inputs and outputs, which dictates soil carbon storage. In terms of outputs, one wants to decrease decomposition, erosion, decrease tillage, and promote soil aggregation, increase soil cover. We'll add to this list here shortly. The other thing I thought was nice that they included here was these environmental variables, adiabatic factors. Ecologists tend to refer to them as temperature, precip, soil physical and chemical properties can modify inputs and outputs. And so the first of these, fertilizer nitrogen. This picture is a picture of the old no-till plots that were established well before I arrived at the University of Kentucky. And you will note it's pretty easy to point out those that are starved for nitrogen versus those that have ample nitrogen, okay? And you see that here. So fertilizer in makes a difference. The other point to be made regarding fertilizer in, over the last decade or so, even really before this, back in the late 80s, a forest ecologist came up with a paper where he found that you add nitrogen inputs, you slow decomposition in forest litter and other environments. And so fertilizer nitrogen effects don't just increase inputs, they can also decrease decomposition. There's a lot of interest to try to understand what this is, groups in California and beyond, looking at how nitrogen addition affects respiration in this study by a NOAA Fares group at UC Boulder over the continental U.S., 12% decrease in respiration as you add nitrogen. Some more recent studies have found changes in respiration as well as enzyme activities, which basically are the functioning arm of looking at decomposition, okay? The last thing to consider, which we'll address today, under environmental variables, soil physical, chemical properties, and this makes a difference. Basically, over the years, folks have found when you have elevated clay content, you can stabilize carbon. However, the jury is still out in terms of clay content. In general, you see increases in clay content can stabilize carbon, but that's not always the case. And so some folks have argued for clay mineralogy in this paper here in the Bing et al. And then lastly, extractable iron and aluminum figure in prominently, namely a study looking just at chronosequences in California where they found that extractable iron and aluminum, pyrophosphate extractable iron and aluminum scaled with carbon stabilization as well. So some pretty important things to consider. Here's an example of the soil profile of the site we'll look at here shortly. Part of the setting, one has to establish the site. And so the site for this was Inner Bluegrass region of Kentucky, located, well, here's a Google image. You can make this out. Here's a little creek that's in the alluvial side, but this is an upland or residual soil that we'll be looking at. And over the years, this was established 34 years of continuous nitrogen inputs. Here on this side of the column, we see when you have no tillage, remember tillage was figured into the output side of our carbon balance, you can accumulate carbon. Now, that's at the surface, of course. Those of you who study tillage and carbon know that. But we see about a 60% increase. You can also increase total soil in as well. But these values correspond to these various inputs. And so you see increases in these guys. And so one of the drivers behind this study that Morgan wanted to do was to see, hey, as this carbon accumulates, are there changes in respiration, as I presented earlier? Are there changes in enzyme activity that affect decomposition and affect the carbon cycle? So we studied this site, and here's an adjacent pit. Adjacent to the site, of course, you can't dig a pit when you have an agroecosystem, right? It's a bit disruptive. But here's what it looks like. It's got a nice A horizon with a transitional AB and a BT. It's on a residual limestone residuum, modest slopes, mean annual precip, 1,100 millimeters, mean annual temperature, 13 degrees C. Remember, those were factors that figured in prominently to carbon storage. So this was the site we were looking at. I should add to these plots, we had nitrogen, but we've not added this limestone residuum is high in phosphorus. So no phosphorus fertilizers have been added. In fact, it's ridiculously loaded in phosphorus. And so, kind of like parts of Florida, actually, where they mine phosphate fertilizer. So the objective, now we'll start getting to the action part of the talk. Look at long-term additions on respiration, enzyme activity, mineralogy, and selective extractions. Just a quick overview of what we did. Iron, aluminum, pyrophosphate, P2O7, does a good job of extracting organo-rich iron, aluminum. Oxalate extracts poorly crystalline, as you heard earlier this morning, oxalate and DCB for well crystalline iron aluminum minerals. And then we use standard procedures for the rest of the study. X-ray diffraction on clay fractions. We took those same clay fractions and exposed them to Fourier transform infrared spectra. And once again, we were just looking at the 0 to 5, I should point out, which is where you see the greatest changes in no-till management. Morgan just followed procedure, which is pretty common, to look at headspace production of CO2, rubber septum injected the CO2. This is unlabeled. It was basal. It was basically not adding any carbon and just following CO2 over time. And she injected air to compensate for that so that things didn't get anoxic. We had this at 60% water fill pore space. Those of you who've done these studies know that you start going above that, up about 70-ish or so, you start becoming more anoxic and organisms cannot respire all that readily. And so that was kind of the study. She also followed soil phenol oxidase enzyme activity. This is an extracellular enzyme. Here are the references if you're curious, if you want to run these. Basically, it's taking a substrate, L-DOPA, which is a dihydroxyphenolic, and you do this under aerobic conditions. And these enzymes convert it to the quinone. If you make that out, it should be red. It's a reddish color pigment, it's a dopachrome, and quantify that to be have a measure of enzyme activity. I should note, because carbon tends to scale with respiration, with enzyme activity, she normalized her data with respect to carbon. I'll show that here shortly. So basically, you're taking that out of the equation. So here's some more action. We have basal soil aerobic respiration as a function of N rate, and you notice that CO2 respired, micromoles per gram of soil organic carbon here on the y-axis versus time. This is cumulative. And you will note that over time, tends to level off here over time after 34 days, and basically where there is no nitrogen added, the zero and even the 168 kilograms of N per hectare, which is about the recommended rate, actually, in the state of Kentucky for most soils, if you're well-drained, they had greater cumulative CO2 respired compared to the high nitrogen rate. And once again, you can't say it's a carbon issue because we've normalized that with respect to carbon. If these curves all fell on one plot, you might expect that carbon might be controlling everything, but it's not, at least we don't think. Phenol oxidase activity is a function of N rate. Here on the y-axis, we have phenol oxidase enzyme normalized once again to carbon versus nitrogen fertilizer rate. There is a negative or an inverse relationship between phenol oxidase, enzyme activity, and nitrogen fertilizer rate. What does this mean? As I mentioned before, there have been some studies that have looked at respiration, looked at some of these things with respect to the carbon cycle, and shown, at least in forest litter, forest soils, that you do see a decrease in respiration, phenol oxidase activity in forest ecosystems as well. This has been reported, not so much in agro ecosystems. So, once again, it's not carbon that's explaining these differences. It's apparently something else. So Morgan went ahead and extracted these soils. These are whole soils for selective extractions. And some of this you've seen before in terms of the iron pools, right? This is nitrogen, once again, an N rate. We have total iron here on this axis, no real change. However, DCB, not much of a change. Oxalate, slight change with high N rate. But then look at this. As we increase our carbon inputs to the system, we're changing oxalate extractable iron and also pyrophosphate extractable iron. In fact, it really goes high, which, remember, that's the organo iron. Folks have related this to carbon stabilization, carbon storage. And so so those numbers are significant. So once again, this increase has nothing to do with maybe erosion or loss of iron, because total iron didn't change. And so what does aluminum do? Nitrogen rate on this column versus total aluminum, well crystalline, polycrystalline, and pyrophosphate extractable aluminum. We see slight increases in oxalate and pyrophosphate extractable aluminum with nitrogen fertilizer rate. Presumably, once again, organic matter increases. There's some sort of a shift in the speciation of these guys, of aluminum as well. Not quite as drastic, if you remember those numbers, as we saw with iron. And so there are some changes in the iron and the aluminum pool. So we went further. More action, okay? We took these clays, and I'm not showing all the X-ray diffractograms for the sake of time. Took all these clays, extracted the clay fraction sand silt clay using standard procedures, and basically found that when we take the 1.4 nanometer peak, which is 2-to-1 phyllosilicate minerals, and by the way, this isn't smectite or montmorillonite, but this is actually more vermiculite, chlorite, HIV, hydroxyinterlayer vermiculite, and illite and some mixed layer minerals. So the proportion of 1.4 nanometer to 1 nanometer minerals is much higher where there's no nitrogen added. This might indicate more of an open interlayer, perhaps, that might be there. This is a mineral assemblage, meaning it's mixed mineralogy, multiple minerals there. And so this decreases this ratio at the high N rate. We went further. We measured IR spectra here, okay? And we found, and by the way, I should back up, we used standard procedures for the clay fractionation, meaning we removed organic matter. However, those of you who've looked at IR spectrum, you see this Ami2 fraction here at about 15, 25-ish or so wave numbers. This is 0 on top, 168, 336. So what this tells us is there's some oxidation-resistant organic matter here. It's not uncommon, okay, but there's this tight association. But the one thing I thought was kind of cool was this factor that here we see what we think is ammonium fixed in the interlayer. This increases with the first amendment of nitrogen. Increase in intensity. This is absorbance intensity here versus energy. And you see it increases with the first amendment of nitrogen, but then it kind of stabilizes at the 336. Kind of bizarre. I mentioned before we have mixed mineralogy here in this system, and what we think might be going on is where you have these reactive 2-to-1 layers of vermiculite and other things. It's collapsing. Ammonium's like potassium. It collapses. And then after that, you're starting to get other factors. The biota kick in, where you get increase in inputs, shifting of things, and perhaps weathering of chlorite, which is actually there, pitogenic chlorite, and other things. So we ran correlations on this. All the data actually were normally distributed. She ran correlations on this, realizing, of course, correlation does not prove causation. However, I think some things jump out which are kind of interesting. Number one, we have this column, phenol oxidase. We have the property on this side, respiration. If you could make that out in red, we have that 1.4 to 1 angstrom peak being positively related to phenol oxidase, negatively related to a lot of pools of iron, okay? And then we have pyrophosphate extractable aluminum being negatively related. So negative relationships for iron and aluminum. And so this leads us to the high point. Respiration decreases in this order. The control, much greater than the high N rate. Greater abundance of 1.4 nanometer clay layers. This positively influenced phenol oxidase. Does that mean that enzymes in the inner layer somehow able to transform carbon? We're not sure. Organo iron, poorly crystalline iron, and organo aluminum negatively influenced both respiration phenol oxidase. Our resolution here, does this mean, well, first of all, the plot thickens with respect to carbon sequestration and no-till. We have to consider iron and aluminum. Typically, in these no-till systems, we consider aggregates and aggregation. However, what's going on with these pools of organo iron, organo aluminum? So the plot thickens in no-till systems. I should add that a lot of recent work has shown that it's mineral assemblage that plays more of a role. So with that, I'd like to acknowledge Martin Vandeveer, some colleagues in the department, and then a Senate Bill Water Quality grant that funded this research. So thank you for your time.